From the sports desk of the Ames Tribune, Ames, Iowa, the home of the Cyclones. This is the Cyclone Slant. With sports editor Travis Hines. Now, the Cyclone Slant.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I am Ames Tribune sports editor Travis Hines. Coming to you on Thursday afternoon of a busy, busy time for Iowa State Athletics. The football team coming off an excruciatingly close one-point loss in Norman to Oklahoma. We don't really need to rehash this much on Thursday, but Brock Purdy's pass goes incomplete, somewhat controversially, on a two-point conversion attempt that allowed the Sooners to leave with a one-point victory over Iowa State. I don't really have much to say about that, like I said, given that it's already Thursday, other than I applaud the decision from Matt Campbell to go for two in that situation. You're down by three touchdowns at one point in that second half, and now you've got it down to one play to go win the game against a top 10 team on the road. I think you take that. And, you know, you had Pedway relatively free. You had Charlie Kolar wide open, where if Brock Purdy has another maybe second to surveil the field before getting pressure, maybe he finds Kolar, and Iowa State is leaving Norman with a victory and its Big 12 title game hopes intact. Not the way it went, though. So they head into Texas. Game this weekend at home against the Longhorns at 2:30. We'll talk about that a little bit. The Iowa State men's basketball team lost Saturday at Oregon State. They beat Northern Illinois despite shooting 12%, 3 of 25, I believe, from three-point range on Tuesday. They had signing day today slash yesterday, and they host Southern Miss next week after being off this weekend. So there's lots to get to. Rather than rambling on just my random thoughts, we're going to structure this around your guys's questions via Twitter, and I'm going to ramble that way. For some reason, that seems like a better idea. So here we'll go. Benji Roos wants to know thoughts on the two big lineup for Prohm after a couple games. Is it working as you expected, or better or worse? I mean, after three games, I think it's really difficult to have a full picture of exactly how this is going to work for Iowa State, especially when the first game is against a team that opened the season ranked dead last in KenPom, against a Northern Illinois team, you know, that had some interesting pieces, but certainly was overmatched from a talent and athleticism point of view. Against Oregon State, it worked poorly. Trace Tinkle goes for 27 points, hits a bajillion threes, including two in the last 90 seconds. That really helped Oregon State win. And we knew going into the season that players like Tinkle were going to be an issue for Iowa State. I mean, we'll get to the I'll address the offensive end for Iowa State with the two big lineup in a second, but I think the as big an issue is certainly on that end of the floor, on the defensive end of the floor, when you have a stretchy inside out perimeter player that can also play the four or even play the five in some situations like Tinkle. Iowa State just does not have an obvious way to defend that if they're going to play two bigs. And even if they don't play two bigs, I don't know that they have an obvious way to defend that. You can go the guard route, which they ultimately did to mostly success in the second half with Prentice Nixon on him. But Nixon's a 6'2", 6'3". You know, that allows, if Tinkle wanted to either take him down into the post or really just shoot over him on the perimeter. You got to give Nixon a lot of credit. He played very good defense against Tinkle, and it kind of just fell apart that last 90 seconds or so, which I'm not sure if he was fully to blame there, if there were more situational issues. But that, I don't think, maybe Nixon will prove me wrong. I don't know that that's a sustainable long-term option for Iowa State to have a 6'2", 6'3 guy guarding the 6'6 to 6'8 inside-out perimeter threats. I don't think it's something that Michael Jacobson or Solomon Young or certainly George Condit are super equipped to do to chase those guys on the perimeter, which is really the bigger issue than if Tinkle were to take Nixon down to the post, because that shot is worth 2 points. If you're trying to chase him around the perimeter with a slower, less athletic player and he gets freed up behind the three-point line, those are worth 3 points. So that's more difficult. You can get those guys in some really tricky pick-and-roll actions. So, I mean, that's just going to be tough for Iowa State. And you know, maybe the option is Tyrese Halliburton, who's lengthy at 6'5", you know, is going to play hard. That I think to the point where he's not going to just get rolled over in the post if offenses decide to go that way. But then you're putting your point guard in some really precarious positions and positions where he's exerting a ton of energy defensively. And does that start to take away from his ability to be productive and handle things on the offensive end where he's got a huge burden? So I don't think they want to go that direction. Maybe Zion Griffin is somebody you could put in that role. And I don't know how they feel about him as a perimeter defender. Obviously, we haven't seen a lot of him over the last season plus because of injuries last year, and just his role on the team never really materialized because of that. They've got him playing basically exclusively at power forward so far this season. But so defensively, I'm worried if I'm Steve Prohm. Offensively, obviously, Tuesday night where you shoot 12%, which was really close to being under 10 if Caleb Grill doesn't come in and can a couple threes late. That's concerning. Obviously, that's probably an outlier performance overall. Like, I don't even, in my most pessimistic forecast, I don't think Iowa State is routinely going to shoot 12% on 25 three-point attempts. But if they can't be 35-40, if they can't be hovering around the 32-33%, that's going to be a problem. And I think the question is, can Michael Jacobson make threes? That's promising through three games that he might be able to. But if you'll remember, and you know, I just think it's fair to maintain healthy skepticism of that because we saw Mike be able to do it last year in the non-conference, and then it just kind of fell apart for him once Big 12 play. If he can continue to show that, I think there's reasons to be confident, but you're not going to know for certain until probably the middle of January whether that's going to be a sustainable form of offense for them. If he is, that solves a lot of your problems offensively right there, because then you're not forced to play two guys inside the arc basically at all times, where then your spacing becomes a huge issue. And I think we saw some spacing issues certainly against Northern Illinois, and the way Iowa State tried to rectify that was with some post touches in the second half to play inside out rather than outside in. That could work. That's not the way it typically works best in this day and age of basketball, but it's not always a bad thing to zig while others are zagging. So we'll see. I think it has probably been about what I expected, but I think it's probably as bad as it's going to be right now, because we're sitting here on November 14th. There's lots of basketball to be played. There's lots of tinkering to be done, changes to be made, progress to be made. I don't think this is what it's going to be all season long. I fully anticipate there being changes, there being improvements, and just, you know, a better understanding of what's going to work best offensively for this Iowa State team. So I don't think there's certainly any reason to be hitting the panic button, but I do think there's a reason to look at it soberly and with clear eyes that there is a potential issue there simply because of the roster construction, the lineups that are likely to get your five best players out on the floor, and just the fact that, you know, who is a great three-point shooter on this team? Maybe it's one of the freshmen that we haven't seen. I don't think you could call any of the bigs great three-point shooters. Tyrese Halliburton shot over 40% from three-point range last year, but he was the fourth or fifth offensive option on that team. And when he did shoot threes, he usually had a pretty great look at it for those reasons. So he didn't shoot a ton of threes. I would imagine with volume and the quality of that look is probably not going to be as great for him this year. Maybe it will be, but that would suggest that maybe that number comes down a little bit. Prentice Nixon and Rajir Bolton are historically not great three-point shooters. So I think there is a ceiling on how great this team can be as a three-point shooting team. I think they got to get to average, maybe a little bit above average, to really make a dent into people's concerns about shooting. Like, again, they don't have to be great, I don't think, if they can make it up defensively and on the boards. But they certainly cannot shoot 12%, which is the expert opinions you come for in the Cyclone Slant podcast. So the next question comes from a cleverly titled account named Suspend Bill Self, who asks, what happened to Terrence Lewis? Should Grill be getting Jackson's minutes? WTF was up with the first 15 minutes of the Northern Illinois offense? Let's go through that in order, I suppose. What happened to Terrence Lewis? I mean, he's clearly, what now, 10th on the depth chart. The two freshmen, Caleb Grill and Trey Jackson, are ahead of him, which I'm sure is frustrating. I think we talked about this the last time on the podcast that, you know, I mean, fair or not, I mean, the reality is that Terrence Lewis has not had a lot of production on the floor when he's gotten opportunities in his first two seasons. And based on what we've seen through three games, the way that Prohm has used his depth and substitution patterns, it would suggest that, you know, they don't believe that he gives them the best chance of winning ahead of those two freshmen and, you know, the other nine scholarship players on the team. I think that's, I don't know that there's much to be said beyond that. And again, it's November 14th, so that can change, but that appears to be the situation right now. Should Grill be getting Jackson's minutes? Again, too early to say. I mean, I think they're really bullish about both those players. I think Jackson has shown them more in practice defensively, and I think they look at them both as being knockdown shooters. Maybe Grill has a little bit ahead of Jackson in that regard, but I think that Jackson's defense has, you know, put him ahead of Grill right now. And again, that can change, but I think that's the reason why you're seeing more of Trey Jackson than you are of Caleb Grill. WTF was up with the first 15 minutes of Northern Illinois' offense. The Eugene German kid was getting to the rim basically at will for the first 15 minutes. That changed in the second half, and I think that's why you saw a lot of more defensive success from Iowa State against the Huskies late. And that'll be, again, is that a fixture of the two bigs? Is that just having a less experienced team that hasn't played with each other a ton on the perimeter? Probably both of those things. I mean, when you're getting a quick guy like that, when you're getting into ball screens, communication and familiarity are so huge. And, you know, neither of those things, I don't think, were working to the best of their ability early for Iowa State. But they did really clean it up, I thought, really well in the second half, to where a lot of the really good looks that Northern Illinois was getting before halftime just evaporated in the second half. So I think you got to get a lot of credit to the Iowa State coaching staff and then the players for going out and executing in the last 20 minutes. Max Power wants to know, why is it so cold? Because it's November in Iowa, my man. And it's not even really that cold. It's like in the 20s. Like, we're used to it. It's November. It's going to get a lot colder really soon for a long time. We're just going to have to deal with it, just like Texas is going to have to deal with it this weekend, and I don't know that they're super thrilled about it. Andy Moeller says, should Grill get more minutes? We need consistent three-point shooting. I don't know if he should. I mean, I think the opportunity is there, and I think Andy hit the nail on the head. Like, if there's a guy on this team that can start consistently making threes, I think he is going to put himself in an excellent position to see more time on the floor. I mean, I will remember back, now that I'm like an elder statesman on this beat, unfortunately, that after the first year Naz Long was on campus and did not play much, very quickly realized that his best path to getting time was to make shots, and specifically to make three-point shots. That if he could do that, he'd probably be on the floor. I would say to anybody on this Iowa State team, namely Zion Griffin, Caleb Grill, Terrence Lewis, Trey Jackson, if you want to bully your way onto the floor and demand more minutes, it starts with if you can make threes and probably defend. But if you can make threes, like there is an opportunity, there is a slot for you on this Iowa State team, because they do, even in a best case scenario, they need more shooting. And they need it quickly before the Bahamas, I would guess, and certainly by January. So if Grill can continue to make threes, I think he's going to find himself on the floor more and more. Screech Diddy asks, do these new recruits make it tougher for Tyrese to decide on coming back or going to the NBA? Let's start with going over the new recruits for Steve Prohm. They've got Xavier Foster, who committed on Monday, the 7-footer out of Oskaloosa, the highest-rated recruit in the class as a top 100 four-star center. Huge get for Iowa State. And I've said this to a few people. It's a great get for Iowa State. That's A1 lead of the story. I think it's more punishing, though, on the eastern side of the state for Iowa, where even with or without what Xavier Foster said about being an Iowa fan but deciding that Iowa State was the best place for him, despite, you know, what his mom said about Iowa State getting players to the NBA or having more success than Iowa. Iowa's roster is built on getting the best players from Iowa. And if Xavier Foster means they did not get the best player in Iowa this year, if that starts getting away from them, that's where you start to get really worried if you're an Iowa fan or Fran McCaffrey. So it's worse for Iowa, even though it's really good for Iowa State. The other four-star in the class is Dudley Blackwell. And then there's a pair of 3 stars in Darlin Stone Dubar, 3-star prospect, 5-star name. And then Jaden Walker, a 3-star guard. Good class for Prohm. I mean, that the class started off where you're wondering, you know, where's it going to go? And they finished really, really strongly to where you feel probably pretty good about that class going into next season. I don't know what kind of immediate impact any of those guys will be able to have. You know, I think they're really, really excited about the talent level and the position that Xavier Foster plays, but it's hard for big guys to come in, you know, unless you're James Wiseman, to come in and play a huge, huge impact in year one. Maybe Foster will be able to do that, but I think it's probably worth it to temper expectations a little bit in the early going for him next year. In terms of how it affects Tyrese Haliburton, I don't think at all. I mean, I think what will ultimately decide, will make the decision for Tyrese Haliburton is where NBA people, where agents, where the Iowa State coaching staff tells them they think he's going to get picked. And if it's 15th or 20th or 17th, then he's probably gone, would be my guess. You know, I do think there is this sense around Tyrese Haliburton that he could be a guy that could ultimately just decide, I like college, I want to stay. That could happen. There's certainly, I don't think any decision's been made. Certainly, I have not been told one way or the other, but that's the general vibe I get, that, you know, nobody is for sure saying he's gone, because I think he does like college. I think he likes, you know, playing for Iowa State. But that said, I do know unequivocally that when Iowa State is going out to recruit players for next year and the years beyond, they're being very honest with recruits, saying we're recruiting as though Tyrese Haliburton is not coming back for next year, which Iowa State has to do. You can't be caught holding the bag if Haliburton leaves where you don't have a backup plan. So that's not them saying they think he's leaving or he's told them he's leaving. That's them just being responsible recruiters to try to make sure they have a backup plan if ultimately their best player decides to leave before his eligibility's up. So I don't think the recruiting class they brought in is any indication of, you know, what Haliburton is ultimately going to do, and I don't think it'll play into his decision this spring and summer one way or the other. Dave Sproul, our man at KASI, wants to know, is Wiggins the real deal now? Supposedly Andrew Wiggins is putting up major numbers, which, good for him, but I will say, as the father of a toddler, the NBA is just not something that I've been able to keep up with right now. Like, there are 24 hours a day and something is getting squeezed out. And right now, that's the NBA for me. It was last year, too. I just have not been able to keep up beyond what shows up in my Twitter feed. But I'm happy to see Andrew Wiggins is starting to live up to some of the potential and hype and expectations that he had. He was awesome at Kansas. I mean, you could see the issues that have cropped up for him professionally. You could see them at Kansas, but it was still... he was an unbelievable athlete, an excellent basketball player. All the tools were there. So I think it's great to see that maybe those tools are starting to be used to the most of their ability, because he, on both ends of the floor, can be a really dynamic player. Don Davidson says, Matt, presumably Campbell, was right. We finally have a Big 12 capable offensive line this year, but we lose Bryce Meeker, Josh Kniffel, Colin Olson, and Julian Good-Jones. What are the prospects for replacement next year? Do you see us staying in the same next year for run blocking and pass protection? I think, and I'm going to write about this later this week, about kind of looking ahead to next year a little bit, even though there's still plenty on the table for Iowa State this year, that if there's one thing to be worried about, it's that offensive line. And again, like, I don't think this offensive line is great by any stretch of the imagination. I think they've certainly been improving over the course of a year and years. But, you know, Don broke it down there. When you lose that many guys, it's hard to immediately not miss a beat. And that'll be the concern for Iowa State, where when you start reading your Phil Steeles and your Athlons next summer, that'll be the question mark that will be the biggest and boldest when we're talking about Iowa State next summer, is how does that offensive line do, which is no different than it has been the last few years in terms of what we've questioned about Iowa State. But when you look around to the rest of the team and what's coming back, it, depending, I guess, on how the next month or so goes for this team, like, we could be looking at another summer of incredibly high expectations for this Iowa State team, maybe even higher than this past summer, which, you know, depending on who you talk to and the people that I talk to have been around this program the longest, certainly put it up there as one of, if not the most anticipated and hyped seasons in school history, certainly recent history. So we could be in for an even higher level of that next year, given what Iowa State has coming back, you know, on both sides of the ball all over the field. But the area where they don't is that offensive line, which if you don't have a good to great offensive line, it's hard to be better than a good football team in this reporter's opinion. But lots to go. I would imagine, too, that they're going to try to get a grad transfer in there just to help add experience right back into the mix rather than just totally rebooting that offensive line. And I think there's pieces there that you could feel there's reason to be optimistic, even with those losses, that they can kind of pick up right where they left off. But that's going to be the challenge for Matt Campbell and Tom Manning this offseason. So, all right, that's probably taken up enough of your time. Appreciate you listening to the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. Be sure to check out everything on AmesTrib.com. Be sure to do that Saturday during the or after the football game against Texas. Dylan Muntz and I will have tons of stuff up. We'll have a podcast after the game. And then next week, more Iowa State basketball returning to the fold with Southern Miss and the football season rolling on. So be sure to check out all of that while rating and reviewing and subscribing to this podcast. We will catch you next time.